It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? Spaghetti and meatballs, peanut butter and jelly, and chicken fingers and meth? At 1:30, it was a fun weekend in college football around the Big 12 and across the country. And in mere minutes, it is our weekly chat with the great Joe Cook of Inside Texas on 3 and the 1-0 podcast. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two, thanks to our listeners who texted in on the Specs text line, 337-3776, and reminded me of a couple things. Yes, Rainbow Connection is the name of the song I was trying to think of that Willie Nelson would have covered, that Kermit made famous in the Muppet movie. Also, it was Daniel Berger that clinched that 19th point, gave the history to the Americans. Nobody. It'd been a long, I think back in an old format, maybe there was somebody that, another team that won by 10 or what. It's been since the 70s, I think, since somebody won by 10, but nobody's ever won 19-9. 18 and a half in this format was the most anybody had ever had. So congrats to that U.S. team, including former Longhorns Jordan Spieth and Scottie Scheffler, who smacked John Rahm down yesterday 4-3. That was very cool to see. All right, more college football around the country, as Trey mentioned, coming up at 1:30. Right now, though, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline for our weekly visit with Joe Cook of Inside Texas and On3.com. He's at JosephCook89 on Twitter, and I believe he was there today when Coach Sark was talking about 70-35. Joe, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, we always appreciate the time, man. This is an interesting kind of press conference. When you're coming off of a win that definitive and hanging 70, which just doesn't happen every day, that had to be an interesting vibe in a press conference, just trying to figure out what to ask. It's like, what do you ask a coach that just put 70 on somebody?
Yeah, it's pretty easy to try to highlight all the positives, and that's definitely something – you know, not just Inside Texas on 3, but everybody's going to be doing this week. But luckily, and even in his post-game press conference, Steve Sarkisian mentioned about they gave up too many deep shots. That's three of those touchdowns by the Red Raiders, I think, were a result of lapses in coverage on the back end. So you're right. There's a lot of positive to talk about, on the offensive line. And we even had a couple offensive linemen available to, Denzel Okafor available today to talk about that. And, you know, another, Casey Thompson with his big week being named Big 12 Player of the Week, a lot of positive to talk about. But there were, you know, Steve Sarkisian mentioned it today that there was a couple lapses that they need to fix. So it was a lot of positive, like you said, like y'all heard on the air. But the football coaches are perfectionists. And if there's one thing wrong, they figure out a way to harp on it. And that was the only thing that really harped on so far today.
Joe, at what point in this game, and I'm assuming it was early in this game, did you realize that Tech really did not have a chance to stick with Texas?
It was the second quarter. Once I saw the way that the offensive line was moving people in that wide zone game, knowing that even though it was a beautiful day outside, it's hot on that field, it's sunny on that field, and knowing that Steve Sarkisian wasn't going to change his plans when he saw just how effective that outside running scheme was, that's when I figured out that this one was going to end up going the way it did, with a lot of yards on the ground, some balance and big shots through the air based off being able to run on the ground. But it was going to be a long day for Texas Tech, and I think I realized their day was pretty much over right around the second quarter. Of course, it's easy to see that with the scoreboard going the way it was, you know, 42-14 at the half. But that defensive line just could not do anything against the Texas offensive line. And not only in the run game, they could not, you know, you hear defenders talk about the right to, or talk about earning the right to rush the passer. Well, that didn't really happen at all for Texas Tech, and I think that's what played into Casey Thompson being able to have, you know, 5 passing touchdowns and find guys in the air and be able to make plays through the air from clean pockets. The offensive line drew a lot of praise, both from, you know, any outlet on 3 especially, but from players as well today, and it was very well deserved.
Well, yeah,
second quarter.
Yeah, Joe, they really look good. And obviously we'll find out as the season goes on how much of that was about Texas Tech's defense and how much was about that O-line. But I just kept thinking, man, this confidence is going to be great for them. The left side, they were able to run whichever way they wanted to. They just seem to have a lot of different options. And then Casey Thompson continues to look more and more comfortable. If the pocket needed to move a little bit, if he needed to step up a little bit, he was able to do it effortlessly. And he's also being very decisive. I think that word continues to be a great description of what he's doing. Make his decision and go.
Exactly. And that's where I think that's a big reason why he is starting at quarterback right now. There are going to be plays when you go through read one, you go through read two, you go through read three, and it's not there. And I think the way that Casey Thompson handles, you know, I guess what option four is, it's to get upfield, and it's to go and use his legs, trust his athleticism, and to go. And we saw that that's not how it played out in not only the Louisiana game, but also in the Arkansas game with Hudson Card. So, granted, you know, a very strong offensive line performance helps him out. It helps the whole offense out. But I agree with you, Chad. He is going through those progressions. He's making decisions. And if there's even some struggle in the pocket, you know, he moves to the clean spot. That's what I think has really been positive about Casey, is that his pockets aren't perfect, but he'll there are not very many throwing platforms that are always perfect. But he's done a really good job of finding the right one, and that played out, I think, a lot, basically on every play except for the interception, and that's one he wants to have back. But that's basically the only glaring time I can really remember him making a bad decision. And I saw that open up, too, from my vantage point. I'm like, that's going to be right there. It's open as he's throwing it, but that defensive back's going to make a play on the ball, and it's not going to be open once that ball gets to where it was, and it played out that way. So one to learn from, but, you know, a good lesson to learn amidst everything else that was going on in the game.
Joe, did you expect Xavier Worthy to be making such an impact four games into his college career? And what makes him so special out there?
I expected him to play. I expected him to start. I did not expect him to be able to show off some of the spectacular plays that we've been able to see like that. I certainly didn't expect him to be wide receiver one at this point in the year, and it's a testament to his hard work that he's been able to do that. And Steve Sarkisian said as much. I think what's just tremendous about him is that let's go back to that long touchdown reception that he had. This is a guy who's fast, and it's a guy who's not particularly big. I mean, he's 6'1", listed around 160, and probably hasn't gained or lost too much weight around there. But he plays like he's 220, and he tries to throw his weight around like he's 220. Now, he doesn't have those 60 pounds, but when you're a guy trying to tackle someone like that, not only do you have to deal with his elite foot speed, his quickness, you also have to deal with a tough football player, and that's what's really impressed me the most. We've seen, I think the foot speed was always going to play, the quickness was always going to play. I think there may have been some question about route running ability, but when you have the foot speed and quickness he does, you can make up for it. But the toughness, not only in when he has the football, but when he doesn't have the football and is running routes and is putting his body on the line to make receptions, that's something that we're seeing out of a true freshman that sometimes takes a few years for anybody to get, and sometimes they don't. And I think that's what's most impressive to me, is that he has come in and he's been ready for what college football has thrown at him, and it's just been impressive to watch.
Talking with Joe Cook, Inside Texas on 3.com. He's at JosephCook89 on Twitter. Joe, obviously, and we talked about this earlier, Trey pointed out that Coach Sark did mention the 2-7 record over the last 9 games against TCU. I think that's going to be an important narrative this week. This really sets up narrative-wise well for Gary Patterson. With what just happened to his team, they gave up a lot. Texas is scoring a ton, and Oklahoma's the next game. It would be real easy for the Longhorns to not be paying attention this week in Fort Worth, but it sounds like Coach Sark understands they must be paying attention because this team has been owning them over the last decade.
Yeah, and to be fair, I was kind of surprised that he even mentioned the last decade, because even last week, you know, I asked him a question about, hey, this is a team and program that is hungry for a Big 12 title, and he gave an answer along the lines of, you know, I'm here where my feet are. And he gave that metaphor about looking through the windshield instead of the rearview mirror and how one's bigger than the other. So to hear him, of course he was going to acknowledge it, but almost even kind of harp on that fact that Texas is 2-7 against TCU in these past few years. And that only one team of, you know, maybe a handful of guys on this team who were there in 2018 have beaten TCU as members of the Big 12. So I was a little bit surprised for him to say that and mention it in the light that he did. But, I mean, even we're talking about it right now. You know, we talk every year about whenever it's time for Texas to play TCU about how Texas just simply has not been able to get the job done against them. And so if we're talking about it, you know it's got to be going on in the locker room, and you know it's got to be going on in meetings. Say, look, these guys have been able to get your number each of the past however many years, and you know, 6 or 7, whatever the numbers are. What are you going to do to stop it? So if I know some people may consider this a trap game because of Oklahoma and the rest of the Big 12 slate going forward, but I don't think this is a trap game. I think this is a game that Texas has scheduled and circled almost every year because they know that TCU has it scheduled and circled almost every year and has carried through on it. So I wasn't surprised to hear Coach Sarkisian speak about it in that light. And, it's nothing that we aren't all thinking at the same time, too. And I think that's something I really like about his answer today.
Mm-hmm. Joe, how concerned should Texas fans be with some of the deep pass plays given up? And this game, obviously, last Saturday, and then also the Arkansas game?
And it seems like every year we're kind of turning or talking about guys who are letting a deep pass play go for one reason or another. And for some years, it's always been turning and looking and finding the football. And that varies, you know, between coaches. Terry Joseph may have a different philosophy than Jay Valai, who had a different philosophy than Jason Washington about finding the football. That's not what these issues are. These issues are just straight up about being in position to even make a play. The one with Deshaun Jameson where he got blown up by his teammate and Brendan Schooler, that's a tough beat. You think that when you push a guy out of bounds, that play, that A, he may give up on the play, or B, that the quarterback's not going to go and look that direction. That's a tough beat, but that's a lesson learned to know that now you can't give up on a play even if you push a guy out of bounds. You better keep pushing him further, but not too far to where you get a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. the one with B.J. Foster, I saw that develop, I think, from where I was situated. And to me, it looked like just a really good cover 3 beater. Maybe it was a cover 1 beater. I needed to take another look at it. But that route combo basically put Miles Price lined up with B.J. Foster. And B.J. Foster's athletic, but he's not athletic enough to get back behind there. Had a late reaction to it. So I think it's not about failing to make individual plays on footballs as it has been over these past few seasons, you know, losing 50-50 balls, just not turning and getting your eyes toward it. It's just about being in the right position and watching those plays and routes develop in front of you and know where to be as a result. They've let that go over these past few weeks. And I think that it's a solvable problem, but it's more about positioning than just kind of bad luck. To me, that's a Monday to Friday problem as opposed to a Saturday problem, and it's one that I know they're going to be working on Monday through Friday.
Joe, I know Longhorn fans may not have come into the week thinking they would be talking about I formation on defensive lines, but they certainly come out of the game talking about it. What did you make of some of that play calling from Kwiatkowski, and specifically, how about Alfred Collins' day certainly shows up with the sack, couple of TFLs. Do you think this is 95's coming out party to where now he becomes an effective part of this team each and every week?
Man, 95 is going to have to play better than 98. And if he and Moro Jomo can keep pushing each other like this, it's going to work out well for that defensive line. But that wild card formation, I saw it. I'm thinking, okay, there's one guy situated on the edge, and then there's the three in line. And part of me really was curious, what's the rationale here? And as I saw it develop, and I saw Keandre Coburn, all 330 pounds of him, as the third guy, I had a sense it was to get that guy a running start on a very obvious pass play to try and force issues for Henry Columbi. Turns out that the guy in front, Alfred Collins, was the one they needed to worry about. It's obviously there to confuse some of the offensive linemen, and it's obviously very effective on pass plays. Not something you want to give up the B and C gaps on both sides for if it's second and four, but on third and however long it was under the goalpost, that's a great spot. And it shows that I think that, you know, we talk about Steve Sarkisian trying to put players in position to make plays in space and giving the ball to the best guys with good opportunities. You can do that on defense too. You can set up your 300-pound nose tackle to be, I guess, kind of a smoke screen that seeps through, and as it was in that play. You can set up your, you know, your one quality pass rusher one-on-one. Just say, hey, this is your guy right here, beat him. And then you can set up your 330-pound bowling ball nose tackle to get a running start on a guy. I felt bad for the Tech center on that one, but I think it shows a propensity not just on offense but on defense too to put guys in positions to win matchups. And Alfred Collins was able to win matchups not only against the player in front of him but against the confusion that caused, and it worked out really well, almost to 2 points for Texas, and also part of a pretty big game for Alfred Collins. Like you mentioned, I think that he had a couple run stuffs, but both of the Longhorn defensive tackles playing three tech, Ojemo and Alfred Collins, they've been having big games, and it's been fun to watch.
All right, Joe, prediction time. What do you think happens with Texas and Fort Worth this Saturday?
That's a tough question. I'm a little early in my research on it. A part of what my strategy for making game predictions is going back to my season prediction. So I always try to keep my game predictions in line with the record I predicted, and I predicted 9-3, and I didn't think TCU was one of these three. I think that Texas pulls this one out. I think that TCU is going to be facing some issues with the Longhorn defensive line that they just, you know, this is a defensive line that they haven't really faced in the current situation that they're in, and they're going to be reeling. Of course, they want to win against Texas at home. They love beating Texas. Gary Patterson loves beating Texas, and they often come out with a chip on their shoulder. I think that chip's going to be matched by the Longhorns this week. And I also just don't think that – I think that the Longhorn defense is going to be able to make some real pressure against TCU's offensive line this upcoming week. I think that Casey Thompson, this is going to be his biggest challenge so far. Each new week seems to be his biggest challenge so far. It's one he's going to have to meet head on. And, you know, I think he is going to have to make more plays than usual this game because they're going to key hard on Bijan Robinson. So – I think Texas pulls this one out. Here's the thing. I predicted 35-28 for Texas versus Texas Tech in a this will be a win, maybe not a comfortable win, but it won't be a last possession win. I kind of see the same thing working out in Fort Worth. It'll be a game where 11 a.m., so you're not going to have a wild TCU crowd, but you'll still have a motivated TCU crowd because it's Texas. But I think the Longhorns can end up kind of taking control, and while it won't be a game where the backups play like they did against Texas Tech, it'll be a game where Texas can feel good about how the game ended and not feel as if they were in any jeopardy of losing at the very end.
That is Joe Cook. Check out InsideTexasOn3.com. And if you're on Twitter, at JosephCook89, give him a follow there as well. Joe, we always appreciate the time, man. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate it a ton.
Good stuff there.
Thanks, Joe.
Get the review of last week's game with Joe Cook every Monday. Easy to review that one when you got a 70 spot up. But certainly the 35 can be a little concerning. And like he mentioned, it's how the 35 happened. It wasn't long sustained 18-play drives, but it was some big busts for the Longhorn defense. And let's be honest, three of those touchdown passes were the backup quarterback getting plays going down the field. So Longhorns have to watch out for that. By the way, if you're just tuning in and you missed it, Texas OU has been officially announced as an 11 a.m. kick. Up next, we look around college football. The new rankings are out in the AP. How far did Arkansas go up after a big win? How far did Clemson fall after a big loss? We'll tell you both of those, take a look at the rest of it, and talk about what happened in some of the big games this weekend. Stay with us. It's the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Was almost there, and then it went over the top. New GNR?
Apparently so.
All right. What's it called?
Hard School, and school is spelled S-K-O-O-L.
All right. See, Axel was trying to play with us there at the beginning.
Yeah.
A little bit of playing around, a little bit of messing, and then he hit us with some Axel. That was good.
I wasn't going to turn your microphone on until he went shrill Axel.
Yeah, then you could feel that's because I was feeling like, oh, this has got a little bit of, like, I feel like I should know it. I feel like I should know that. And then he started growling, and I went, oh, okay, there it is. There's the Axl Rose we know. All right, some new GNR out there, some new Temptations with Smokey Robinson, some new Willie Nelson, all of that a part of the new music hit on a Monday. Everything comes out, of course, on Fridays now with new music. Remember, RBKD out in Round Rock for you today on University Boulevard. The Coors Light Silver Bullet seats, I believe they're doing this for the next home game, which, of course, would be Oklahoma State, but you got to keep planning ahead, you know, for those things. Two roadies coming up, a roadie and a neutral, but you know, and then Oklahoma State will be the next home game. So get on out there and see them. They're on the University Boulevard location of HEB. Shout out to HEB for being a great partner of ours around here. And remember, Cowboys and Eagles tonight, pregame at 6. So the guys will be out a little earlier than normal. 6 o'clock pregame, Cowboys and Eagles. Let's see if Dak Prescott and the Cowboys can keep the momentum going from the win over the Chargers. Feels like a month since they played, Trey. It's weird. This week for me as a Cowboys fan, it just felt like forever. And it was a late kick. They kicked at 3:25 last week, but I swear it just feels like a month since I've seen them play.
It's almost like a burden when your team is on Monday Night Football nowadays. Like you would almost rather that game happen on Thursday versus having to wait for the very last game of the week.
I'll tell you what I might not be enjoying as a Cowboys fan right now. It's the other side of it. They'll play tonight, and then they have a noon kick Sunday against Carolina, an undefeated team with a good defense.
That should be a good game.
That should be, but that turnaround, knowing that Carolina had the Thursday night game with Houston, so they got that extra rest to come all the way through.
Boy, that game was in Houston, too. Carolina getting to spend a lot of time in the Lone Star State early this season.
Yeah, if they really wanted to, they just could have stayed over. But I'm sure they went back home for a little while. A lot of NFL out there, but also the college football side of things. Around here, folks are talking about 70, because you don't normally see 70 points, even nowadays, with horrible non-conference matchups or whatever. 70 does not normally happen, but the Longhorns hang 70 on Texas Tech. You certainly don't see it in a conference game very often. We've obviously talked about that. Trey, elsewhere in college football, there were certain games going in. We were watching the big matchup in Chicago was so weird. Tale of two games. Like, this felt like a Big Ten, just nasty. I was waiting for the end of it, like, oh my God, this is going right to the edge.
It was a boring game in the first half.
And it was what I thought we would see, honestly. I thought it was going to be ugly. I thought it was going to be like a 20-24 is going to win the game. And then the fourth quarter comes around, and Wisconsin just forgot to finish the game.
Well, and they remembered to just start throwing pick sixes like nobody's business, too.
It was two pick sixes that really stretched it, right?
Two pick sixes. The first one, you could argue, put the game away for Notre Dame. The second one, turned it into an out-and-out rout.
The other thing was a kick return, right? Notre Dame, weren't they the one that had the big kick return? Once Wisconsin had scored, Notre Dame came right back with a kick return, I think.
I am not recalling or that. Maybe, I have to look that up right now.
Maybe it was. Maybe I'm thinking of it in the opposite way. One of those teams had a big kick return, so maybe I'm thinking of something that didn't ultimately affect the game, but I thought it was Notre Dame that got that turned, where Wisconsin had a little bit on them, and then they turned it. Let me double check.
Nope, it was Notre Dame taking the lead with a 96-yard kickoff return to go up 16-13 or 17-13 with the extra point.
And then they never looked back. Okay, so it was that. So just big plays. If you didn't watch the game, just huge hunk moments that went Notre Dame's way made it seem like they absolutely blew Wisconsin's doors off. And in a way, they did, 41-13, but the stats were a lot closer. So Notre Dame with the win, they end up sliding up three slots to number 9, getting just inside the top 10. I'm not quite sure if they're a top 10 team, Trey, but they are still undefeated. They're getting it done. And because of what we're going to talk about here in a second, there's another spot available in this playoff. Notre Dame is one of those prime candidates to grab it from somebody.
No question. And we're about to see the ACC left out of that conversation for the first time in forever.
Yeah, because Clemson loses to NC State. If there was ever a year, now, first off, by the math of this playoff, of the pageant that we've set up, they're out. It's over.
Yes.
Nobody with two losses has ever been in the thing. So Clemson, if everything holds, is out of this thing. But even if they could fight their way back in, Trey, it's not on their schedule. We already told you as we were leading into the season, they don't play North Carolina and they don't play Notre Dame.
No, they don't.
They don't have the opportunity to claw back in. Nice job by NC State to get that win. Clemson falls almost all the way out. They gave Dabo a little bit of respect by not kicking him all the way out, Trey. They left him at 25. For the week, he fell 16 spots with that loss.
Why are they still in the top 25? Like, ultimately, and we can get into this in a second with Texas, or maybe we'll wait until the top of the hour for that one. AP polls at the end of September really don't matter all that much, but what are we doing here? Clemson should not be in the top 25 right now. They are not a top 25 team, as dysfunctional as most other teams in this poll are outside of the top two.
And to get a home win, look, I know, I guess maybe it's popular with AP voters not to totally trust Texas at certain points of the year, but it's a week-to-week thing. They just put 70 on somebody in a home conference game, and now they are the best team receiving votes, but they didn't get them into the AP poll. That didn't make sense to me. I'm with you. And I'm okay with leaving Clemson maybe at the very bottom there, but you got to creep Texas in somewhere.
No, no, no. Keep Texas out of the poll for as long as possible.
Oh,
I hope
like
they
that.
Beat
okay.
TCU by 42 points next week and they keep Texas out of the top 25 for reasons that we heard talked about in the press conference today. That this program, like a lot of programs, but is especially the case here at Texas, tends to get the cart in front of the horse when they experience a little bit of success. So I would rather the chip on that shoulder continue to grow, keeping them focused on the task at hand before they are officially ranked again. Now, if they beat TCU, they will be ranked in the top 25 at that point, heading into a big matchup in Dallas with the Oklahoma Sooners. But I am okay at the end of September, them not receiving AP poll love. I saw some Longhorn fans who were genuinely upset about this over the weekend. It's like, guys, see the forest through the trees here. Being ranked 23rd on September 26th, 27th, it doesn't matter for squat. What Right. matters to me is whatever it takes to keep this football team focused going into a matchup that has been extremely problematic over the last decade.
Yeah, what should matter for you is that they figure out a way to play the game before the game.
Yes.
Because they could really easily look past this thing. I understand with the TCU stuff, but it's set, I'll say it all week. This week just sets up so well for Gary to go under the radar like he always does, to be not respected like he. What's the line on the game, Trey? Have we looked that up lately?
Last line I saw was Texas by 7.
Okay. I was waiting for it to be maybe up in double digits and Gary'd really have something to yell about.
And I love this one from Bob Ballou, who has been all over this. Gosh, where did this stat go? Okay. Bob Ballou on Twitter 16 hours ago. TCU is 7-2 against Texas in the last 9 meetings. The Horned Frogs are 2-8 the week prior to Texas the last 10 years. So whatever you're seeing out of them that week before, it means nothing for what's coming up.
That's a great stat. I had not realized that one. Nice job there, Bob Ballou. Texas and TCU coming up this week. So Notre Dame.
And that includes, by the way, sorry to cut you off there, 0-6 in the last 6 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Wow, that is a good number. So Notre Dame gets that big win. The other ranked matchup of the weekend was the one at Jerry World, also a neutral site game. Arkansas got kind of a broken bottle win against A&M by 10, 20-10. So Arkansas jumps up eight slots into a top 10 ranking. They are number eight. By the way, your top is Bama, Georgia, Oregon. Penn State is your magic number four now. Iowa, Oklahoma slips two spots even with a win. We'll get to that one in a sec. Cincinnati as at number seven. So Cincinnati, Notre Dame is a top 10 matchup this week, which could be really interesting. But Trey, Arkansas handled their business. Here's the thing we've learned over the last few weeks. If you have issues on your offensive line, don't play Arkansas. Just don't.
Yeah.
I don't think they're great. I don't think they're elite. I probably don't even think they're a top 10 team. But if you have trouble blocking people, don't play the Hogs. They will make you look silly. All that 3-on-5 stuff that they did to Texas, yep, they did it to the Aggies too.
Same goes for if your defensive line is not coming ready to play. They will make you pay by running the football down your throats too.
Yeah, they will get after
it. And A&M has a much better, maybe it's a little bit more even than I'm giving it credit for, but A&M looked more ready to play on the defensive line than Texas did in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is definitely fair. The Aggie nickname discussion for that defense needs to be put away for a while.
Yeah.
Because some of the tackling was horrific. Mr. Hansford, to push that guy into the end zone instead of making a tackle, that was horrific. That was a horrific moment. It was 10-0 at that point, and an opportunity for you to keep them at bay. And you couldn't do it. No talk of nicknames for that crew for a long, long while. They've got to figure some things out. And obviously, offensively, they are a mess. But Arkansas now plays Georgia this week with an opportunity to really make a statement. I think they are in Athens, too, if I'm not mistaken.
That is all of a sudden a huge game. You want to talk about a physical affair in the trenches?
Yeah. See, that's why I think Georgia might be all right comparatively. I think if you have an offensive line, Arkansas is not that big a deal. Not that they're bad or anything. I think it's a different game when you can block well.
Yes,
when you can, it's a mess.
That is true. Looking around the Big 12, Chad, a couple of big games that we talked about heading into the weekend, three for that matter. West Virginia,
that
was a tight one.
Almost
with Oklahoma, they almost beat them. And watch out for West Virginia the rest of the way. They are going to be tough competition for any other good teams in this conference. The Oklahoma State Cowboys actually showed up in a way that I did not think they would, really drumming Kansas State and Spencer Sanders. Had one of those games that in the past has led us to think, wait a second, has Spencer Sanders started to turn that corner now where we see this elite level of play out of him going forward? I'm not being fooled this time. This is that one-off Spencer Sanders game. He will revert to form, hopefully, I guess it would be technically a little bit less than 3 weeks from now when they play the Longhorns. But Oklahoma State does get an impressive victory over a Kansas State team who is obviously down their starting quarterback right now. And then the Baylor Bears beating Iowa State in Waco. It was impressive, Chad, because you look at the statistics and you're like, how in the world did this happen? Iowa State nearly doubles them up in yardage. The turnover number was the same.
Mm-hmm.
Iowa State killed Baylor on time of possession, but then you look at the special team stats.
Hidden yards.
And Baylor and Iowa State punted the same number of times, but Baylor had double the punt yardage. Mm. They had a kickoff and a punt return for a touchdown, if I'm not mistaken, by Tristan Ebner, who was named the special teams player of the week. And this won't be talked about as much, and I guess I understand that, but Iowa State still had a chance with a very small amount of time left if they could recover an onside kick. Ebner made a fantastic play in waiting for the football to come to him. They squibbed it into the middle of the field, and he started to step forward, which would have made it a more difficult catch. He saw that there was not an Iowa State player in his face, so he stayed back and had a much easier time corralling the football, downing it, and sure enough, Baylor pulls off the upset win.
Congrats to Baylor and Oklahoma State, who are now ranked. Oklahoma State 19, Baylor 21. We mentioned the Longhorns are receiving votes, but those two did get big wins. Interesting note, Trey, I looked at the numbers we talked about last week. Four Big 12 teams threw the ball more than they ran this week. They were Oklahoma and West Virginia in that game, and then K-State and Texas Tech in losses. were the teams. Then there were the other six teams ran the ball more, which is a little bit more what this conference is about in 2021.
And Kansas State and Texas Tech throwing the ball makes sense because they were down by such wide margins early on.
A little surprised, though, to see that Oklahoma and West Virginia both threw the ball more in a bar fight like that.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to be more of a running game.
Both teams are better. I say that typically this year. They have been better running the football, but Oklahoma was actually better throwing it on Saturday than they were running it. Gray just never really got going on Saturday.
I bet you if we show Neil Brown that number, that would piss him off because I know he wanted to go to Norman and not do that. He didn't want to go to Norman and throw more. He would have loved to have gone in there and run the ball effectively. To come out of there with Letty Brown on your team and you didn't run the ball more than you threw it, that's probably why they lost.
Yeah, you want to put more faith in Letty Brown than you do Daigie, right?
Yes, absolutely. So a big weekend in college football. Let us know what you thought of it, whoever your team is. Obviously, Longhorn fans enjoying a 70-point effort against Texas Tech. And now get ready for TCU. Remember, 11 a.m. kick there, and we now know OU is an 11 a.m. kick for Texas if you missed that. We'll get back into the Longhorns at 3-1 at 2 o'clock. Up next, though, Trey's got a little where we at in society. Apparently, it goes together like peanut butter and jelly. It's what and meth? Trey will tell you on the horn.
Shirts and Skins.
New stuff hits on Friday. Sometimes we play it for you on Monday. What do you got, Trey?
I dig most of what I hear from this band. This is Parquet Courts, and the new song is called Black Widow Spider.
That's not bad, yeah. Parquet Courts. Boston band, maybe?
That's a good question. For some reason, I thought they were Austin at some point. Let's see those.
Be appropriate if they were.
Down. Parquet Courts. Ooh, it doesn't really say. Never mind.
Trey, somebody texted us on the Specs text line 337-3776. Did you hear the crowd chanting, "We want Caleb, the backup quarterback"? That was in Norman. They booed Rattler.
I didn't hear that.
And were chanting for the backup.
Parquet Courts, by the way, do have Texas roots. They're in Brooklyn they're Brooklyn by way of Texas. I did not hear that, and it's not surprising, though, because I've spoken with some Oklahoma people that have not been thrilled about his performance this year. And this actually went back to last year, too. Remember, we spoke with Tyler McComas at one point this summer, and he talked about how the OU defense was really elevating them to victory at times last year when the offense just wasn't getting it done. Now they have less in the way of skill guys, especially on the outside. The rushing attack isn't going to be quite as good because Stevens is no longer there. The defense is still salty, and the defense is the reason why they are currently undefeated, more so than the offense, I would say.
After a long run where we could look at both of the Oklahoma teams and say, man, have you seen those receivers? It's not there this year. Either side.
Hazelwood has looked okay sometimes, but no, I agree with you there.
Yeah, when Stogner might be the best of the group, both teams.
Stoops.
Right? Stoops kid? I mean, neither team just has that badass receiver that you got to pay attention to. Obviously, the Longhorns will get to Oklahoma after the TCU game. We're getting a lot of great text in on the Specs text line. This one says, funny, until Saturday, fans were hyped for the Texas defense and a little pessimistic on the offense. The D played okay Saturday, but Texas had not seen any real passing teams. It's a good wake-up call. Should light a fire under the D for TCU.
I hope so. I hope our defensive line continues its salty play. Hopefully they can figure out a way to get through to Keandre Coburn and get him playing a little bit better because Ojomo is playing out of this world right now. Alfred Collins, it's starting to turn on for him as well.
Yep.
Jacoby Jones, you'll see him flash here and there. The linebackers I do still worry about against a good, truly disciplined rushing attack. I think far too often they're either late and getting going where they need to be or just crashing the point of attack. They seem lost at times, and the safety play leaves a lot to be desired right now. Even Jaron Thompson had a really bad angle on Saturday, but V.J. Foster, he'll make the occasional nice play, and I know that he was the guy who hit the Tech receiver low on the ball that ultimately popped up that Luke Brockermeyer intercepted, but B.J. Foster has somehow regressed from his freshman year to now in ways that I did not think was possible. He's not a surefire tackler anymore. He constantly takes bad angles. He's a liability in coverage. He was on coverage on that first Tech touchdown pass. But I don't know who the best option is behind him right now. Maybe a Chris Adeyemo. That's something I'm going to look at as we go throughout this week to see if there maybe is another option they can put back there at safety with Jaron Thompson.
Yeah, a couple things on defense. Obviously, the return game, he's been fantastic, but Jamison doesn't need to get beat like he's getting beat on a couple big deep balls. That's got to be looked at. And then you mentioned, I heard you guys in the postgame talking about the I formation defensive play. Obviously, it was a big play for Collins. And I heard you talk about Coburn and kind of the you thought he sort of got stood up on that play. I'd love to know what Kwiatkowski was asking of him there, because I went back and looked. That dude went 6 yards backwards. So I just don't know if that's what 99 was supposed to do on that play or not, but his guy went backwards for 6 yards.
That's weird. I went back and watched that, and it looked like Coburn had gotten stood up there, which was concerning because he had a running start on that guy too.
Right. Go watch that play again, and you come back and tell me, because I heard you say that, and I'm like, ooh, I didn't notice that part of the play. But it looked to me like I just don't know what the idea was there. Was he just supposed to muck it up? Or were they expecting 99 to make a play there? Because I never know with defensive tackles. You know what I mean? Like, I never know if the defensive tackle is supposed to mess it up so somebody else can do it, or if they're supposed to do it. So that was a wild play, and I'm interested to see if Kwiatkowski continues that kind of stuff. But it felt, that felt, you know, forward-leaning in terms of scheme. It felt aggressive in terms of scheme, and that was really cool. If I'm a Texas fan, I like that part of it, just the idea of staying aggressive.
They apparently call that the, Coburn is not penetrating like he needs to. The guy does go back a little bit, but Coburn is not getting him out of the way, and ultimately, isn't that what you're trying to do there? You're trying to get to the quarterback because it's an obvious passing down versus getting shoved. Versus getting shoved to his left and giving a possible running lane to the quarterback, because the middle of the field was somewhat open at that point in time. But fortunately, Alfred Collins did get the job done in that situation.
We'll get back to more Texas football here in a little bit, but Trey's going to try to help you pair something with meth if you're looking for that. That's not the right way to intro this, but here we go. Where are we at
in society today?
Yeah, that's right. Where are we at in society? Sponsored by Student Loan Payment Lawn Care. Get yourself on the schedule to have all those landscaping needs taken care of by going to slplawncare.com. We go to Alabama for this next story, Chad, where a guy in Pleasant Grove, Alabama, hours after getting out of jail, steals a car in Hueytown. Days later, he broke into a concession stand at the Pleasant Grove Athletic Complex and was found asleep on a pile of snacks and meth, according to police.
Strong.
Matthew Williamson was released from the Jefferson County Jail on September 17th after being arrested and charged with breaking into a car and stealing property earlier in the day. Well, he is let out of jail, subsequently steals a car, goes into the concession stand to essentially probably find some place to eat, do meth, and maybe fall asleep for a little bit. And unfortunately, when he breaks in, the alarms sound, the police get called. By the time they get there, this dude is just passed out, surrounded by piles of, according to the police report, chicken fingers, chips, candies, and methamphetamine. Williamson, who is 37, was readmitted into the jail for stealing the car and burglarizing the concession. He is not available to get out on parole.
Thankfully, I don't know this for sure, but I'm just theorizing that when you get out of jail, baby steps. I mean, you just want to gradually get yourself back into the world that you knew.
Maybe just break into the concession stand. Maybe don't steal the car first.
Maybe. Or, like, go somewhere where they serve chicken tenders.
Like, do meth in the bathroom and then eat the chicken tenders?
Yeah, go, like, get out, find a buddy that maybe drove you away from the jail, and y'all go get chicken tenders.
Yeah, get the chicken tenders to go. And then find an alley somewhere where you can do the meth and eat the chicken tenders.
Oh, my
God. And if you really need to pass out, you could do that, too.
Oh, my goodness. Thankfully, I cannot comment on how chicken fingers and meth pair together. I do not know the answer to that question. Thank goodness. All right. If you're just jumping in, it is Monday. The Longhorns scored 70 on Texas Tech. Lots of folks commenting today. All right. I'm seeing somebody sent us a graphic here that says Casey Thompson has the number one QBR in the country, 94.8. Is that real? Is that a thing?
Sure.
All right. Is that for the game or like the whole season, I wonder?
I'm guessing whole season, okay. Although he does have two interceptions. He's looked good in just about every other throw, although he's missed on some deep balls. His numbers look really good right now.
Good
and
number.
We haven't seen stellar quarterback play across the country.
Somebody says Coburn definitely had to stay in his gap on that play in case of a draw or quarterback run.
Well, he wasn't in his gap, though. That's the other problem. The lineman kind of moved him to the lineman's right. So it's just like he was occupying space, kind of, but at the same time, the middle was wide open for the quarterback to run if he could have gotten through Collins.
That was a wild – that's a wild defense to run at any point, but the fact that they ran it coming going down on the goal line like that, that has to be an extra level. Did you see the Texas Tech center, by the way, on that play? Did you see his reaction?
I can look at it right now.
There was a lot of head movement going on. He was looking to his left and looking around, trying – he looked like he wanted to stand up and run away at that point. Like, what are they doing? What am I looking at?
You know what's funny? I think it was the Tech center who actually takes on – yeah, it was the Tech center who took on Coburn after that.
Because he looks over to the left. And, yeah, that had to be it. He's looking over to his left guard. They're trying to figure out, okay, who you got? What happens here? And whoever it was that decided they had 95 did not have 95.
They ran that play one other time in the game. I need to go back and watch that to see what happened with that play. I feel like in real time – it may have generated an incomplete pass or something, but they didn't get to the quarterback again. But I love them showing a look like that because there's some flexibility in terms of who goes where. So even watching the game tape, it's not like Collins, Coburn, and Ojemo, if that's the third guy there, they're going to take those exact same routes the next time.
Somebody
can go one of many ways.
Somebody's going to clarify the QBR stat for Casey Thompson for us. We'll continue to talk Texas. They're 3-1, and they hung 70 on the Red Raiders. We also have a kick time for the Oklahoma game. It's what you would have expected. We'll make it official for you if you've missed it. Coming up next on The Horn.